I have some pretty savvy boys because my boys often know like the right things to say to Heather, to my wife, to their mom, especially when sometimes she's getting a little bit upset about things. In the past, this is how it would normally happen. One of the boys would do something wrong, and she's going to punish them. And so she often would come to them, and in her anger, she's like, I'm so upset. You know what? I am going to take away everything. And you know what my boys would say? Super smart. I love my boys. They're great. You know what they'd say? They'd say, well, Mom, then you would have to take yourself away because you bring us joy. And she'd be like, oh, I love you. Here, have anything you want. And my boys, they're smart, super smart, and I love it. So out of curiosity, what is some of the stuff that brings you joy in life? When, maybe even for Christmas, if it's not Christmas specific, that I, you know what, I'm going to tell the story because they're down in, so right up here, Emma and Carrie, I said, you know, share with each other. Don't tell them I narked on you because you guys, people, you won't, okay, good. I guess they turned to each other and simultaneously, Emma looks at Carrie and says, cookies. And Carrie looks at Emma and simultaneously says, you. And so Emma's like, you with cookies. No, she didn't say that. I made that up. What are some things that bring you joy? Family, friends. Yeah, good, good. Yes, Josh. My mom, very good. She's watching. I'm going to get a text in about 15 seconds. Yeah, wonderful. My mom. Other things? Babies. Oh, my gosh. Yes. Grandkids. Yes, wonderful. Good. Christmas decorations. I love Christmas decorations, too. We got a bunch of them around here. I love it. Yes, Michael? Church. See, that's why you're my favorite, Michael. Yeah, you're right. Especially the sermon, right? Yes. Yes. Matthias. Hearing Christmas music everywhere you go. That, Matthias, are you a purist? Do you have to wait until after Thanksgiving, or do you just start playing it whenever you feel like it? Oh, you don't? But it brings you joy. Where he goes. Okay. All right. I like it. Someone else had their hand up. Yes. What brings you joy? Nature and night sky. Yeah. And the night sky. Yeah, good. Marge? Rams victory. Yeah. A Raiders victory would bring me joy. I don't think I'm going to have any joy this football season. Yeah, yeah. Other things? Yes. Oh, crafting. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that brings us joy in life. And so this is the question that I have for you. It's very similar to what we talked about last week, too. Is your joy contingent upon your circumstances? Because I think it is. I, if we're going to be super honest about things like this, and it was so funny. Last week, I was killing myself because there was a word that I was supposed to use, and I couldn't come up with the word, so I kept saying words around it. So anyway, the word was supposed to be coalition. So last week, it was coalition of hope. Do you have a coalition of joy? Things, multiple things that make you happy, especially if you end up in a circumstance you don't like. Something makes you sad or depressed, and so you then go and find something else that brings you that joy. And I also understand there's probably going to be some level of degree of differing between joy and happiness, right? So there's things that maybe make you happy. I think what is probably the definition or the difference between those two? I think most people would say happiness is a much more temporary, euphoric thing that takes place, where joy is something that's much more abiding, abounding, and it stays, it's enduring. And I think that that's a great thing, but I think a lot of that stuff overlaps. So like if, let's say you're having a bad day and all of a sudden you won the lottery, would you have joy? No, you wouldn't? What about you? Would you have joy if you won the lottery? Like I might be, yeah. No, is it happiness or is it really joy, right? But if your joy is contingent upon money in the bank, what happens when you go bankrupt or you don't have any money in the bank to pay the bills? Now it's your joy might be contingent upon your circumstances. You know, there's that cute boy and you hoping that he asks you out, and he asks you out and you're filled with some joy, like, yay, this is actually really wonderful. But then what happens if he doesn't? Then you're not pleased with what's going on, and you have a lot of self-doubt, and maybe it's very difficult for you. I think a lot of the times we're contingent on things. If you just get the announcement of a birth of a grandchild, right, that's going to make you happy. That's going to give you some joy. And then you find out that grandchild is rotten to the core and spits up on you all day long and, you know, is always sick and, you know, pulls your hair and says, why are you so fat and things like that. And all of a sudden, this kid is not very much joyful, right? God's joy in our lives is not supposed to be based on a coalition. And I think this, it should be telling for you, if things are not going right in your life, where do you turn in order to recapture joy? If it is something like food or money or Amazon two-day shipping or other things, that if you turn to something and that brings you that level of joy, you might have displaced trust in something that God is crowding out God. If when things are going wrong, our first inclination is to go to God, then we might find joy that's going to last through chaos, through challenges, through difficulties. So that's what we're going to be talking about. And as we do this, be thinking about it in your own life. If today everything that brought you joy outside of God, obviously, if everything that brought you joy was taken away, what would you do? How would you live? Would you live? Would you survive? Would you thrive because your joy is not in those things or those people or those persons, but your joy is found solely in God? Again, I'm not telling you not to find joy in stuff. Like, you know, Matthias, play the Christmas music, man. It's wonderful. I love it. That gets me, you know, excited a lot of times. If you enjoy watching Hallmark Christmas movies, I could tell you they're probably going to get together in the end. So I think that's... I did see something recently that Netflix is working on a second plot to Christmas movies, so I'm really excited when that comes out. So if that brings you, there's nothing wrong with finding joy, maybe even some temporary joy in that, because I think God gives us those gifts that we get to see around us, but we always got to be careful that those do not become where we put our hope in all the time, that our joy is not found in those all the time. If that's the case, God may have to do something very, very painful, and that is take certain things away so that our faith, our hope, our joy, our peace reside in Him and Him alone. So Psalm 126, I just thought this was a really cool thing because it talks about what you can do, especially when you're in the midst of maybe some things that are challenging. So Psalm 126, it is a song of ascents. Now, for all the Concordia people who were there for my chapel message that I gave in a month ago or something, I actually started with this. Were any of you there for my chapel message? Yeah, you were there. So Mia, if you were going to say, what is the song of ascents? What is that the equivalency to? Do you remember? See, it was probably not that memorable. Oh, that was the message that I talked about, so that's good. Yeah, I opened it up with, what is on your travel playlist, right? What are some of the songs on your travel playlist? Christmas music? All right, that's good. Someone yelled out right at the beginning, boom, life is a highway, right? If you're traveling somewhere, right, you put on some music. This is what the Song of Ascents is supposed to be. It's a series of several psalms that were put together that were designed to be sung, especially if you were ascending to the city of Jerusalem. Jerusalem was on a hill, and so the language was always, hey, we're going to go up to Jerusalem, not because it was north, but it was literally up physically. So you'd come from any direction, people would say, I'm going up to Jerusalem. And so they created these songs that they would sing. We don't know how it would be, and it's not rhyming. This is very much Hebrew poetry. But these would be reminders of the communal aspect of bringing joy and bringing life and reminding people of stuff. So this is a song of ascents that we're going up to Jerusalem, and this is what is, I'm going to read the whole psalm. It's a short psalm. I'm going to read the whole psalm, and then we're going to go back and look at it. When the Lord brought back the captives to Zion, we were like men who dreamed. Our mouths were filled with laughter, our tongues with songs of joy. Then it was said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them. The Lord has done great things for us. And we are filled with joy. Restore our fortunes, O Lord, like streams in the Negev. Those who sow in tears will reap with songs of joy. He who goes out weeping, carrying seed to sow, will return with songs of joy, carrying sheaves with him. So the context of this, it says at the beginning, this is when the exiles are returning. Now, of course, I read through a bunch of stuff, and I didn't know if this really was that late. The exile was a period in time, it was called the Babylonian captivity. It was a period of 70 years, where the nation of Israel had been taken off into Babylon, conquered by Nebuchadnezzar in 586. And so they were taken off, and they were told they were going to be in captivity for 70 years, and then they were going to be able to return. And if you want to read about the return, that's in Ezra and Nehemiah, and it was the three major leaders, the three waves that came back, Zerubbabel, Ezra, and Nehemiah, all came back into the land, rebuilt the temple, and did all of that stuff prior to Jesus returning. So it could be that it's in reference to this, but if that's the case, then that means this is a really late psalm. Because a lot of the psalms were written by a guy named David, and this would be well before that time. So I started thinking, not many commentators really like gave this much thought, as best as I could tell. So I was like, was there ever a time with David that maybe he could have written something like this, and it wasn't the actual Babylonian exile, but it was something different? And I did find something. And I'm wondering if that's what this is in reference to. I can't prove it, but I give it to you. You don't need to turn there. I'm just going to tell you the story, but if you're a note taker, it's 1 Samuel 30. David is still being pursued by King Saul. It's late, though. Like, the Saul-David feud is nearing an end. Saul is actually about to die. The prophecies have already been given. This is after 1 Samuel 28, which is, again, the scariest story of the Bible, where they, you know, conjure up the soul of Samuel. So it's after this time period. We're just waiting for it to actually take place. And so David is actually with a total another nation that's about to go and attack, but then they get kind of kicked out of the army. So David and his men decide to return back to base camp. And when they get there, everyone's gone. Everything. It was like it seemed at first probably like a giant prank. But they're looking around and they realize all the wives, all the women, all the kids, all the cattle, all the money, all the supplies had all been captured. They'd all been taken. Now, I really tried to put myself in David's shoes. Like what would that feel like if all of a sudden, you know, Heather and the boys are captured and carried off somewhere? And then someone also then not just did that, they took everything. I mean, this is Grinch-level proportions, where everything, even the tiniest piece of rice and even the ice in the icebox has been taken away. What would you feel like? I mean, this is about as bad of despair as you could probably hit. the level of sadness would be literally off the charts. And then you complicate the issue because David's men, instead of blaming the people who took everyone away, they all start blaming David. They're like, David, this is your fault. And David's like, wait, I'm grieving here too. And they're just weeping and they're sad. They're not going to get their families back. Everything's ruined. And they're in this complete despair. And you know what David does? This is why I like David so much. David decides to go and talk to God. I thought that was interesting. I mean, I don't know if I would. If I went to go talk to God, I might have some choicer words than what David said. I would probably be super angry. I would have no joy. But David, in this connection at this time in his life, and how his spirituality was so dependent upon God, he went and he found a priest, and he said, I need to ask God some questions. And he says, okay, what are your questions? And he says, I would have asked things like, well, why did this happen? What's going on? David says, should I pursue the captors? Essentially, what he's trying to find out from God is like, is there any chance that all these people are still alive? Or are they all dead? They've all been captured and taken. Are they all dead? Is everything gone? Where do you go? Where are they holding up at? But David, that's a question he asks. He says, God, should I pursue these people? And God says, yes. So he says, will I be victorious in fighting against them? Because he doesn't know how big is this group that's taken everybody. And how many people does he have? At that time, David had 400 men. That's it. 400 men. And those 400 men are all devastated. Their wives, their children, their flocks, everything is gone. They're not in a really good state of mind to even be battling. So that's why he says, God, should I pursue? Answer is yes. Will I be victorious? And God says, you will be victorious. And so David says, all right, guys, let's go. We're going to go after them. And so they all get all set up. And I don't know how they figured out like which direction, where things were at. And so they start and they're in this pursuit and they're going like at top speed, right? It's 400. They're lean and mean. They're not stopping for a lot of resting. They're not stopping to refuel. They're not stopping to eat a lot. They are going double time because they are set. And while they're going, what are they probably doing? They are probably weeping. I would be too. I would be devastated. Everything is wrong. My life is upside down. I have no joy. But David knows that his joy comes from God first. And that if he does what God wants, even in the midst of sadness, God turns those things around. He changes mourning into laughter. You sow in tears, but you will reap in joy. That's what God has promised. So David knows, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep doing what God asks. Things are not going well. My life is in chaos. My life is ruined, but I'm going to keep going. I think that's the first big lesson we need to learn for ourselves in terms of what do we do when everything is changed and the stuff that brought us joy is no longer around us. What do we do? The first thing you need to do is keep going. You go to God and keep going to God. I honestly do not care if you show up to church and you're just bawling your eyes out because everything's bad. I know we sing the songs and you see a lot of people clapping and there seems to be a lot of smiles, but that's not everybody. There's some people that are going through some really tough stuff. If you need to just sit and cry, Because at least you're here in the house of God. And God has this crazy way, when you keep going and you're sowing those seeds, God's going to bring back to you this level of joy once again. So they're pursuing, and they end up running into an Egyptian, and they realize and recognize that this guy was part of the group that had taken the women and children and the food and the stuff. And so they talk to him, and they're like, you got to show us where these people are at. And he says, well, if I show you where these people are at, can you make sure you don't turn me back over into their hands? Because I'm pretty certain that because I gave up their location, I'm pretty much a dead person. So I'll show you, but don't give them back to me. And they said, you know what? That's great. And so they're getting ready to pursue again, and about 100 of David's men are exhausted. Because I don't know about you, crying and weeping is one of the most physically exhausting activities I've ever encountered. I know there's a lot of tiring things out there, like going to Disneyland and going from 8 a.m. all the way till the park closes. I know things are exhausting for Christmas because you're just going and going and going and going and you feel really exhausted, or things are really exhausting when you stay up late so that you can ring in the new year. I'm talking about us old people. For all you young people, we get tired on things like that. I'm sure you guys don't, and it's why I remember those days like, oh, this is fine. But you guys get to take naps, and I don't get to take naps, and so I'm very exhausted by the end of it, but maybe you are too. But have you ever wept, and at the end of it, like, your body just slumps over? It's exhausting. And so 100 of David's men say, David, we can't keep going. We don't know what to do. And I don't blame them. I don't think they gave up. I think they just literally had nothing left in the gas can to give. And David said, okay. I want to make a point of this because it comes back later on. Spoiler alert, David gets everything back. You can tell by the thing that there's going to be joy you sow, and then you, but they come back, and when they come back, the men that were there that couldn't carry on, a lot of the people that went on said, you know what? You all get nothing. You get nothing. You did not pursue with us. You did not sacrifice everything. You don't get anything back. And you know what David said? He's like, no, they were exhausted. They were crying their eyes out. And you couldn't go on. And if you can't go on, you know what? God still says, you get a share in this. This is, again, my theory, and I'm pretty certain I'm right on this because it's from Scripture. When the disciples are hanging out in the Garden of Gethsemane, and Jesus is going and he's praying, and he comes back and he finds the disciples asleep, right? And we always get that in every land. It's like, yeah, because they're just not motivated enough, or they don't understand that, you know, this is a time to be praying, and every time you pray, you just get really sleepy. And so these poor disciples are just a bunch of idiots, but I'll stay awake for Jesus. I love Jesus, this is wonderful. Now, one of the gospel writers says specifically why they fell asleep. They were exhausted from crying. They knew what was about to happen. They knew that Jesus was going to die. And they were exhausted from weeping. If you have ever been in that place, or if you're in that place now, God sees it. God knows it. God's not going to punish you. He's not going to say, well, gosh, I guess you don't really care that much. No, sometimes that's what happens in life. You're still encouraged to then, let's keep going. Let's see what happens. I don't have anything left to give. God, you're going to have to give me strength that I don't have. Some of you feel that way around Christmas, right? For some people, this is not the most wonderful time of the year. This is the worst time of the year. Keep sowing. Keep going. God will give you joy. Sadness may remain for a night, But joy comes in the morning. So they pursue, they pursue, they pursue, they come, they find the people that took everything, and they destroy them all. And the way, it's crazy the way the text reads it, it says not one person nor one item was missing. Not one. Like, they didn't slaughter one pig to have bacon. They didn't kill one kid who was noisy. They didn't eat one loaf of bread. God says, I'm gonna restore to you. I'm gonna restore joy into your life. I think that's maybe what David is thinking. Now you gotta imagine, after the fight is done, do you think there was tears of sadness being shed anymore? this overwhelming sense of joy. David gets his family back. All of his men, all of their wives and children are all restored. And I wonder, again, I can't prove it, but I wonder if that's why this is what is said. When he was saying, restore our fortunes, O Lord, like streams in the Negev, those who sow in tears will reap with songs of joy. There will come a day when this will happen for you. I don't know when, and I don't really know how. Some of you, unfortunately, are going to have to wait until you breathe your last breath to have certain fortunes restored to you. Maybe a loved one who's passed away, people in your family, or maybe it's a restoration of health, that when you pass away, God's going to restore all of that to you. But if you have the privilege, maybe God will restore some joy to you this season, this time. I don't know how, and I don't know when, but that's what I'm going to be praying for. I love another psalmist says it this way, and I pray this for you, because I think when we base our joy on something very specific, not just God, but something else, which is the fact, the truth, that Jesus came, lived, and died for us. And because of his resurrection, all of our fortunes will be restored in heaven. But he also says, you can have joy now. And this is what one of the psalmists says, and this is a great prayer, I think, for all of us. Restore unto me the joy of my salvation. Think about that. Like, that's, if there's anything that can ground us, if there's anything that can cut through the sadness and the depression, if there's anything that can bring us out of a state of utter despair, is the fact and the truth of the salvation that God has won for each and every one of us. And if we have our trust and our hope and our faith in God, he will restore joy. I pray that if December is a month that you absolutely abhor, I pray that maybe God will give you some level of joy in some way. If you are someone who is struggling because of a circumstance, that even in the midst of that, maybe it's an ugly breakup, or maybe it's a betrayal by a friend, or maybe it's just whatever circumstance. If you are finding yourselves being crushed by that, I pray that God maybe today just gives to you this sense of joy. And I understand when it doesn't come in the way we want it. When I was a kid, I remember one of the greatest Christmases I had was they had just been invented, so yeah, it's really sad. Remote control cars, right? And I'd asked for it from Santa, and Santa bailed on me, which is really sucky. But my parents came through, so I love it. So my parents got me this remote control car, and I remember unwrapping that gift, and I am looking at this. I had the greatest joy in my life. I was literally the happiest kid. But my joy was circumstantial. And I found out quickly, because I quickly got the batteries out, put it in the car, and I start driving it around. And in my house, unfortunately, the entire house was carpeted including the bathrooms. Yeah, I don't know why. It was really weird. And so I started driving my car, and guess what happened? We had fibers out of, you know, when you have your carpet, it was a little bit thicker and shaggier. It started winding up in there, and I'm like, and I pull out all the things, and then I have joy once again. And then I do it, I run in, and I run for a little while, and then I just, and I'm like, and I'm like, Mom! And she's like, oh, here, you know what? Let me see if I can get something better. And I'm like, Mom, they make ones that are like trucks. And they're like, they got big wheels on them. So I think that would be helpful. She's like, okay. All right, so she goes to the store. Now I'm getting really excited again, and the joy is starting to build up, and this is wonderful. And my mom comes back, and she gives me the board game Operation. The board game Operation does not get stuck in the carpet. It doesn't. And I'm like, Mom! The remote control of the truck. She's like, they're all out. It's like the day after Christmas. There's nothing. I'm like, so you got me Operation? She's like, that's all that I could get you. My circumstantial joy being wrapped up in what I want. But it's really interesting. Do you want to know how much fun that game actually is? It's actually a fun game. I mean, it's a little, you know, nerve-wracking when you're trying to pull something out. And you're like, I just killed the poor guy. But no, he's alive. It's all good. It just, his nose lit up. And I had lots of joy. But it was interesting because I found joy in something else. I found joy in the gift that was given to me that I didn't even know that I needed or wanted. Could that be the same for you? Maybe you've always wanted something. Maybe even God gave it to you. And then you find out it's not there. Maybe, just maybe, you are locating your joy circumstantially in something and not in God. But maybe you weren't. And now maybe you're sad. And you want to know why. And you want to wonder. And maybe God's going to come in with something different. A gift that can be given to you that will maybe not bring you the full joy that you had before, but it's going to restore some level of joy in your life. And if you are someone, again, who locates all the joy in one place, I just encourage you, find joy in those things. There's nothing wrong with that. But be careful that, again, that's that coalition of joy that is not, if God is not a part of it, he wants to be a part of it. God sent his son to this earth for you and for me to bring us joy. And when we have joy, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. But he did not sacrifice his only son on the cross for us to find joy in everything but God. So if you are finding everything joy but God, I pray that you lay those things aside. Contemplate for a little bit about what God has done for you. The level of love that he has for you. And that no matter what happens in this world, your future is secured because of Jesus. And there will come a day all your fortunes will be restored because of Jesus, who gives us joy. Let's pray.